The following episode of FOFOP is rated MA. It contains alternating hosts, a rotating roster of guests, and mild coarse language. FOFOP advises that it is not suitable for anyone under the age of 15, or anyone who came here looking for one of those highbrow NPR-type podcasts. Minors must be accompanied by a parent or guardian. This is John Deek speaking.
Hello and welcome to FOFOP. I'm Charlie Clawson, and my guest this week is one half of the Weekly Planet podcast, Nick Mason. Thank you for agreeing to do this. This has been a long time in the setting up. A lot of cancelled dates.
But here we are, finally. We've cut out the dead wood, Charlie, is what's happening here. No award-winning comedians, no YouTube superstars with a million followers. Just two real ones. Just having a good old-fashioned chat.
Yeah, it's like that joke in The Simpsons, isn't it? Where it's like, Hall & Oates. It's like it's the two offsiders getting together to form the supergroup.
Well, I like to think of myself as one third of the two-man podcast, The Weekly Planet. But, because the other half puts all the work in. But I show up and I say dumb things about Spider-Man or what have you. And here we are. Here's a question for you, Charlie.
Are you a
Charles Clawson?
I am a Charles Clawson, yes.
Ah. When do you think you're going to do the switch? You think you're going to switch at any point?
If I suddenly become a novelist or something.
Yeah.
I think there was a point where Charlie Sheen moved into Charles Sheen, but everyone was like, mate, you are no Charles. And that is not sticking.
Right, exactly, yeah.
That's not sticking.
I think if you switched to maybe directing, you could be a Charles Clawson. It would lend you some gravitas. Well,
here's a little bit of inside baseball for you. When
this is what I'm here for.
When I first met Charlie Pickering, me and Charlie Pickering and Michael Chamberlain and a couple of other comedian performers, we're all working out of the same production company in Melbourne. And when I first met Charlie Pickering, he was Charles Pickering. And that was the way that we easily distinguished in the office between, you know, who you're referring to. And then at some point, Charlie morphed into Charlie Pickering. And then it became this running joke of, well, who's Charlie? And I became, because I joined the group later than everyone else, because I was the new Charlie, I became evil Charlie. That was the joke, as if, you know. But yeah. I was always like, hang on. But I was Charlie. You were Charles.
You were Charlie,
and then you're like, oh, I like the cut of this new Charlie's jib. I like his casual lad about town attitude. I want to be Charlie too.
This is a real alpha move. That's a real, you know, it's rude is what it is. That's what alpha moves are. It's just a guy being rude.
Well, you see, I've heard you referred to as Nicholas Mason, as Nick Mason, and as also Meso. Is one of those more common than the others?
Yes. Well, everybody but my parents call me Meso, I think. So, but
it'd be weird if your parents started calling you Meso, because arguably honestly, they could be Mesos as well.
That's
then you have to call them evil Meso.
I'd have to be little Meso. That would be embarrassing for me in the family unit.
I'd like you to be everyone. Lil Meso, LIL apostrophe Meso.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, well,
I was going to say the Charlie thing. I think some names fit the person, and I think I'm very much a Charlie. I often say when I had my dog, I'd always go to the park, and it was very common for me to hear my name called out because Charlie is a very popular name amongst dog owners. And I think because Charlie, maybe it's because of popular culture and all that kind of stuff, but Charlie evokes a sense of friendliness, you know, like Charlie's your friend.
Chocolate factories.
Cartoon characters, you know, comic strip characters. It doesn't inspire a lot of respect or awe, you know? And then I think you go the other way with Charles because of Prince Charles. You know, I think if maybe there wasn't a Prince Charles in our lifetime, maybe it wouldn't have the same austerity, but I think people kind of like, they hear the name Charles and they immediately think pretentious.
Yes, exactly. Well, you have to dispel them of that notion immediately. So Charlie works. Charlie's friendly. I have one more question for you.
Okay,
and then
let's
we can get to whatever this is. Are you in a Mazda commercial?
I'm not in the Mazda, but I'm the voice of
You're the voice of Mazda. Okay, right.
Yeah,
did they give you a free Mazda?
No. I mean,
could you get me a free Mazda?
I can't.
I'll take an MX-5 RF in blue with white leather seats.
Well, I tried to, like, here's the thing. Like, when you do some kind of, like, a popular show, like a Home and Away or something like that, uh-huh. there is this kind of, some actors are able to spin that into, you know, endorsement deals, are mm-hmm. able to get, like, you know, become brand sure. ambassadors, things like that. And so when I was doing Home and Away, I'm like, this is going to be great. I am going to cash in on my newfound fame, and I'm just going to get free cars and free clothes. Uh-huh. Turns out not a lot of people wanted to be associated with me. I could not get that free car.
Wow.
Couldn't even get a free haircut in some places. It was like, okay. I really thought that there'd be people just banging down my door. I'm sure if you're a Chris Hemsworth or something like that, it's a little easier. But maybe the close to middle-age dude isn't exactly the key demographic for Home and Away endorsement deals.
But now that's become your brand. People do not want to associate with me. That's
well, you know what I get a lot of, and I don't know if this is just like I'm on some bot mailing list, but I would say every couple of weeks I get someone slides into my DMs from a ball shaving company. Like, hey.
Oh, is it Manscaped? Manscaped.com?
It's Manscaped. There's another one, which is, I think it's just called Ball Shave. Like, it's really, they put no effort into naming the company. But it's somehow I've slipped into this algorithm. It's like, who looks like they have hairy balls? This guy. This guy is our perfect ambassador.
Well, we did the Manscaped sponsorship for 1 week.
They sent us all the equipment.
And never again. So I don't know if people, again, maybe it's a branding issue. People are like, these guys don't.
Well, you're very astute. I mean,
but just the top bit. I think maybe they're like
baby smooth.
Yeah, I think that people are like, that's a trick. They're like Ken dolls ultimately, or they're just dirty and gross, and they won't. Either way, people are not buying the product from these guys.
I think the footy podcast I do with Will, Two Guys One Cup. Mm-hmm. We struggle to get sponsors, and I think a lot of it has to do with maybe the name of the show. We probably thought about the commercial prospects of our show before we named it after an infamous pornographic film.
pornographic is generous there as a term.
Yeah, good point. But I remember at one stage we had the podcast was with a sales company, like a company they're going to go out and find us advertisers, and like they were very enthusiastic about it, and they were going out and they were trying to find us this and trying to find us that, and nothing was sort of coming along. And then we'd been doing the show for 3 or 4 months, and finally they came to us and they're like, "We have an erectile dysfunctional company that interested." We're like, look, I mean, we want a sponsor. We don't want a sponsor that bad, particularly as we become the spokesperson. And you know how those ad reads go. Generally, they want a personal endorsement at some stage.
They sure do, yeah. There used to be a, look, I don't know why I remember this, but there used to be a TV ad for some sort of erectile dysfunction product. And it was sponsored by, it was endorsed by Maradona, the football
the soccer
star.
Player, yeah.
And he would go, "You should use this product. I would." He clearly he went in the room and he's like, I will admit to nothing, but I'll grant you, if I did have this problem, I would use the product, but I don't have the problem. So this is for the rest of the losers. This is for the riffraff who have dick issues.
It's like that Lonely Island. What was that great, the pop documentary Never Stop Stopping? What was that?
Never Stop, Never Stopping. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Never Stop, Never Stopping. One. And they did that great Macklemore spoof of the song, "I'm not gay, but if I was, I would want equal rights. I'm not gay, but if I was."
Yeah, yeah.
So I wanted to ask you, your show, the show that you are one third of, The Weekly Planet, hugely successful, all based, for people who haven't heard it, you should definitely check it out, but it is basically a pop culture podcast. You know, you talk about movies, TV shows and comic books and sometimes video games. And this is something that obviously you guys were into before you started the podcast, but now it's a job of sorts and, you know, you're expected to see films and stuff, because the thing I've noticed as I'm getting older is I have sort of less time and patience for things, but you guys are so diligent in seeing everything. Is this getting harder for you? Is it dulling your love for the genre or for the genres, having to see things, you know, for your audience?
Great question. Look, I would say in any given year, I reckon 25% of the stuff we see, maybe we're not super jazzed about. Like,
right.
Okay, well, it's, you know, it. I mean, but at the same time, you know, it's probably stuff that I wouldn't. I'd probably see, like, you know, on DVD or something like that. I wouldn't go out and watch Jungle Cruise, just because we've been absolutely inundated with Dwayne the Rock Johnson content, and you know, there's only so much a man can take. I'm very much a person who I'd rather not do anything. But once I've been forced into it, I'll quite enjoy it. I'm not a you know, do a live podcast kind of guy. I'd rather get out of it with any you know, with
without having to
maybe yeah
without like, having to I th- be in I front think, of a live audience or
well, exactly but yeah
turn it
but
into
once
a job.
I'm there, yeah, that's right. But once I'm there, or once I've done it, and I'm meeting people, and you know, I'm like, this is great fun. I would do this again tomorrow. But then the clock resets in my brain, and the next day I'm like, wouldn't.
Nah.
I feel like a lot of perhaps the last 18 months has been some sort of monkey paws situation because a lot of people have, you know, a lot of people were like, hey, you guys should tour and do some live shows, and I'm like, I wish I'd never have to do any live shows.
Oh, so you started COVID.
Yeah, it was
this
me.
Is your fault.
Yeah, it was me. Yeah, it was me.
I thought so.
I did a bit of a mucking around in a lab as well, just for giggles, just for a fun little prank.
Well, sometimes I get really jealous of your show. I mean, obviously your success, I'm very jealous of that. But it's more the idea that you actually have a format, because when Will and I started, you know, TOEFOP, that back then no one was doing podcasts, and the fact that we were even doing a podcast, that was the show. That was the gimmick. Two guys are going to
talk.
Yeah,
right, right. Yeah.
And now there's like days where it's like, can we really just get together and just talk? Like, yeah. I mean, last night I was like, because I know we're going to be recording later today, and I'm like, I've got to find something to talk about. I mean, look, I love Will, and, you know, a conversation's always easy with him, but, like, surely, you know, people are going to catch up soon enough that, hey, this show's about fucking nothing. These guys don't talk about anything. And then, you know, I listen to your show, and you guys actually have a structured format where you'll go through the news, you know, you'll talk about this and that, then you'll talk about whatever the latest release of something is, or you'll have like a theme topic for that week, then you talk about what are we reading, what are we going to read, and it's like, man, is it too late for TOEFOP to, like, can we graft?
I'll pivot. You could pivot.
Well, because
we pick an underserved market sector, and then you know, pick your demographic and et cetera. Yeah.
Well, I think we kind of like spook people, because sometimes we do. Like, we'll do an entire episode about Endgame, and it's like, wait a minute, well, you guys are doing movie reviews. You're doing movie reviews now, but then that'll be like in complete isolation. Then it'll just be like another 6 months of us just talking. Mm. And it's like, how can we, I mean, do we just stick with what's working? I mean, it is kind of working, but
yeah.
Part of me is like, it would be less stress for me. Maybe it's a bit like you with the kind of, you know, the waking up each day going, while I'm doing it, I'm like, oh, this is working. You know, there's no need to stress.
Yeah, right.
But then
another
week rolls around, I'm like, we've got nothing to talk about. I'm going to start combing the internet. I even found myself on one of those, like, you know, weird of the world websites where it's like,
sure,
what are some wacky stories
yeah.
that I can bring in so we can generate some content? I don't have to use my brain.
But wouldn't you, I would say, like, you know, I imagine you guys have heard of the term the parasocial relationship, like the idea of, like, you know, people,
tell me, educate me.
Well, it's sort of the idea behind, you know, you see, and I think it began in sort of, you know, the 1950s when television first became a thing. It's the idea of sort of people will see, you know, a personality on television, and that person will tell people about their lives and red carpet premieres and all this sort of stuff. And then people go, I'm feeling connected to this guy. Oh, he's okay. My friend kind of vibe. And I think that podcasting is kind of, you know, it's 100%. That. Yeah, it's that, but sort of to the nth degree, where people are just like, I don't necessarily, you know, I imagine people in your real life don't come up to you and be like, we need to have a format for this conversation, Charlie. We need to have I've made some notes, and this needs to have a very defined beginning, middle, and end, and we have a letters section at the end, and then we'll adjourn for the week, and then we'll come back for more friendship next week. I think people are just like, I like these two guys, and it doesn't matter to me what we are collectively talking about, but it's nice to be in the room with these guys. I don't know if you've ever paused a podcast because you've been listening to it and you have a great point that you would like to share with the hosts, because I've done that.
Yeah.
And then I sort of pace back and forth in my apartment, and I'm just like, how am I going to Do I tweet this at them or?
I've often done that with your podcast where I've heard you guys talk about something and I've paused it and I'm like, do I message them? Or is this like, is this terrible fan, like fanboy behavior where I'm like, well, I would like to have my say on Endgame. But then the other thing that I often do with podcasts is I will quote them to other people, but I won't say it's a podcast. I'll say, oh, friends of mine were talking about this. And I'll just say, you know, the three guys who do a podcast in New Jersey. I'm like, oh, yeah, these friends of mine were talking about this exact topic last week. And they reckon.
Charlie, you've been parasocialed. What's happened.
I think that is true in a way, because a lot of the feedback we get from people, I'm always surprised when people talk about they will put TOEFOP on to go to sleep. And at first I was insulted by that. I'm like, oh my God, is that like, you know, those calming apps where, you know, they get Cillian Murphy on to read some story and he's a lilting Irish accent. But then I think it is exactly what you're saying, or is there is something sort of comforting about the familiarity. You know these two personalities, you know the dynamic. I mean, there's a couple of podcasts I listen to which, similar to TOEFOP, have no definable format. They're not about anything. But I couldn't possibly recommend them to anyone because, you know, some of them I'm 8, 9, 10 years deep and I'm so familiar with the relationships within the group of the people doing the podcast, the in-jokes they have, that I couldn't recommend it to anyone because it would be like, you would not be able to just jump in at episode 465 and get a handle on what these people are talking about. So I do kind of get that, but there's also part of me which is like, but should it be about something? Like, you know, we have
You know, like what could you twist it into? What hobbies and interests do you have, Charlie?
Well, look,
if
you're asking what we could twist it into and what are my hobbies and interests, I think they're two separate things because I don't really have any hobbies or interests, so I'm not going to delve into those. But, I mean, I could definitely twist it. If Will and I wanted to pivot into kind of, say, like wellness, or like if we wanted to slowly start seeding some kind of alternative lifestyle suggestions, I think that maybe... Because TOEFOP, you know, it's lighthearted and we go off on tangents and hypotheticals and stuff. So that's a great way to softly introduce people into kind of, you know, maybe some like...
When you say wellness, do you mean right-wing grifting? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, pretty much.
I won't lie to you. James, every week, James and I say, you know what would be really easy? Like, you know what we should have done years ago? Just do a right-wing grift. Just say some lies and then say, give us money. And we wouldn't have to watch any Jungle Cruise with Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Well, I don't know if it's left or right, but we could definitely push some dodgy products, you know, lamps that cure this, lamps that cure that. I mean, Will and I have both moved up to the Northern Rivers and, you know, that kind of, that lifestyle is rife. So it wouldn't be hard for us. I mean, I think at one stage on the show, I watched that vegan propaganda film, Game Changers. It was on Netflix. It was a big sensation for a while, and it totally sucked me in. I was like, oh, my God, this is right. Like, gladiators in Roman times didn't eat meat, and look at them. They were gladiators. Gemma was 8 months pregnant. It was a very stressful time. I wasn't really thinking right, but I was easily manipulated into trying a vegan diet for, like, I think I did it for 3 months, and I came on to TOEFOP. And said to Will, like, yeah, you know, like, I'm trying veganism and, you know, I want to change my lifestyle and this, that, and the other. And Will, who is much more skeptical and cynical about these kind of things, in fact, has a new show called Question Everything, which will be starting soon on the ABC, was like, I think maybe you should just do a bit more investigation on the filmmakers and find out what their motivations are. And as it turns out, like, a lot of the science in that documentary is quite flawed. But if Will hadn't questioned... And I think if I had pursued that line, I think there would be a fair, and this is not to say anything negative about our audience. I just think it's human nature. Like if you're going to confidently sell bullshit, I reckon more often than not, percentage wise, you'll get at least 30% if they're already fans of yours. I mean, like when we do a live show, which is, we're essentially selling bullshit and we'll normally sell out
that's
a live show. So,
if
I can get that same amount of people to buy my wellness lamp, then, you know, Will and I could be grifters in no time.
Yeah. We could bring back the Peter Brock crystal-aligned engine component. Are you aware of that?
No. I learned about this quite recently. What was that?
Peter Brock, famous Australian race car driver. He was on the inner circle of Holden's sort of car development team, and he insisted on a lot of models like this sort of this box of crystals that was in the engine, and it aligned the molecules of the car and just made it run better. So yeah, and this was so Holden is, you know, at the time was owned by General Motors and in America, and they had no idea this was happening, and then all of a sudden they just got, you know, some photos and some insider knowledge that Brocky was putting a box of crystals in the engine. So
I worked for a company doing some copywriting for a short time, and that was a lot of products that were they were trying to bring into the Australian market coming from Asia, and what they would normally do is they'd send me all the kind of documentation, which is all fairly, you know, jargon heavy kind of technical documents about, you know, the product, and then I'd have to sort of create some snappy kind of copy about that to put into like a video or a radio ad or whatever. And this company was selling these stones. I believe they were just stones. They looked like smooth little disc-like stones that you would put into your water, and apparently they would energize your water and like give them added vitamins and all this kind of stuff. And the company I was working for, you know, they were just a multimedia company. They were a legit company. This was just a client that they'd taken on. And so I was sort of, when I got the documents, because this is the first time anything like that had come across my desk. Like everything else I'd written copy for had been like a legitimate product. But this one was like, I went to the boss and I was like, hey, you know, I sort of been reading all everything they sent me. It sounds a bit woo-woo. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And he was like, he's gone, you know, I don't know anything about that. Like, look, all I know is they've paid to get some marketing material written. if you want to take it up with them, you know, here's a email address. And so I started emailing with, you know, the head office and wherever it was. And I got sort of just caught in this like spiraling rabbit hole of bullshit misinformation because I was giving them the benefit of the doubt as much as I could. Cause I was like, so just tell me exactly how does it energize the water? Like, what is the process? Yeah. Because
how old were you at this point, Charlie?
This was like, you know, in my mid-20s or so.
Yeah, right.
And so I was trying
Still bright-eyed and bushy-tailed
what I was reaching for was give me something that I can sell because I can only really write what I believe. And you telling me that a stone energizes water, it's hard for me to put that into language that, you know, I can write. So I just kept asking and asking. And in the end, I just had to go back to my boss and say, like, I think you need to find another writer because this is complete fucking hocus pocus. So I don't know. I haven't seen those stones in the Australian market. I might have been the man on the wall stopping Australia from being invaded by
there might be a documentary in a few years, you know, the man mystic that killed stones. The energy stone. Yeah. And that's you get a tap on your door and it's like, excuse me, did you know these reduce the risk of cancer? And also you put them in your water and you can have a nice glass of water. And actually that's more water is actually good for you. So
tell me your approach. I imagine you must have some friends who believe in, if not like they're full-blown anti-vaxxers or whatever, but most people will believe in something, whether it's UFOs or ghosts or anything like that. And people that ordinarily, you know, you have a lot in common with, you know, they seem well-adjusted. But what's your approach? Like, I mean, first of all, do you have any beliefs in anything supernatural? Like, do you think that there's anything that you're like, well, I don't know for certain, but, you know, my grandfather once came to me in a dream and told me to put $20 on a horse and it won, so
not once. My mind is a barren wasteland of just hard cold reality. It's just, a stone is a stone as far as I'm concerned, Charlie. There's no magic in the world.
Well, I think because I was raised Catholic, I think that I was raised believing in stuff. Like I genuinely believed in God and I had all this kind of like, I think the Catholic Church was my first exposure to showbiz, you know, because, you know, there was a priest up on the altar and there was a captive audience and, you know, there was like a call and response and all this kind of stuff. And so I was like, it's like being part of a secret club and there's costumes and all that kind of stuff. And then obviously as you get older, you start going, I'm going to question some of this stuff. And I even, when I was 17, I did a my school had a scholarship where you could go work with missionaries in India. And in order win the scholarship, you had to sort of go be interviewed by the school. And I remember that, so I've been a very emo, cynical teen. I sort of, in my first meeting, was like, I don't believe in God. I think all religion's bullshit. I think missions are exploitive. You know, and I went through this. And they were like, Jesuits.
But I would like your money. Yeah. I'll take your money.
I would like the experience.
I'll take the money and the trip, you know, so.
Well, because I went to a Jesuit school, and Jesuits are, they've been excommunicated for like five times in their 500-year history by the Catholic Church. Okay. And generally, Jesuit priests, they are a priest, but they also have a degree, and they're doctors and they're lawyers. They have a professional degree on top of that. So they're very well-educated men, and their philosophy is to question. They don't like people who just like numbly accept what they're being told. Mm-hmm. So they saw this whippersnapper as being like, oh, this is the kind of, we like the cut of his jib. We want to send him over here. And to be honest, it was an amazing trip. Like it was, I did go work with these missions, and what I saw was essentially like just community work. So you'd have these, I think when India got its independence, they kicked out all the missionaries apart from the Lutherans and the Jesuits. And so they still work with a lot of these kind of more impoverished communities. But what you're seeing isn't my idea of what missionary work was, you know, literally the movie The Mission with Robert De Niro.
Yes, I'm sure.
You know, like a violent violent conversion of indigenous people. Mm. But that's
the
not
mission
what
it was not. The mission, Charlie, was not to, you know, rappel down inside a, you know, a server room and not touch the ground and download some data. It was not that kind of mission at all. This
Well, that sounds impossible
sound.
For a start, Nick.
This guy gets it. Charlie gets it.
But then when I was over there, I was like, oh, this is cool. So essentially, you're using the framework of religion just to encourage, you know, community cooperation and stuff like, hey, let's get these two villages talking to each other so they can build a school together or well. And so it was really great. But then I sort of came back to Australia and was like, oh, no, religion here is about being the most horrendous person you can be. And then on Sunday, going to church and, you know, saying you're sorry and getting away with it. And so I went back to my cynical self. But because of that, I think I'm really cynical now about anything, you know, that doesn't, that you can't be proven. But I'm constantly meeting people who, like I said, they ordinarily like 90% of their beliefs, are like, you know, I agree with. And then it's like, oh yeah, but I believe in ghosts. And I'm like, but like, have you had a direct experience with a ghost? Because I think for me to believe in a ghost, I need more than hearing a piano playing at the end of an empty house. Like, I need to be sitting there with the ghost and having like a really frank, honest discussion about life after
that's
death.
That's right.
Like, it's all the cryptic nature of the supernatural that drives me insane. Like, why are we getting these cryptic messages from beyond the grave?
Right?
Like, why isn't it just like a literal, there is life after death. This is exactly how it works. These are the rules.
Right? Exactly. And you know, surely by this point, there are enough people who have died and returned as ghosts who understand, you know, texting and social media,
100%.
And at the very least could use like an Etch-a-Sketch and give us a legible message. You're absolutely right. That being said, I do love a ghost tour. I don't believe in any of them, but I love a, you know, it's late at night and you're in Melbourne and there's a guy and he's dressed as Snape from Harry Potter and he's touring you around the city and he's telling you all about how this used to be the site of a big old time murder and now it's car parks.
Yeah.
That's it. That's absolutely my speed. I'm like, this is a car park now currently. This is very good.
I did
you're not wrong, sir.
I did a ghost tour in Edinburgh where I don't know if you know much about how Edinburgh was built, but essentially there's like a city on top of a city. So the rumor is, and I don't know if this is mainly, it's been, you know, mythologized, but the idea was that they just literally sealed a whole bunch of very poor people in and like built a new city on top of them. Because the way it was, I think it was like in the mid 16th century, you basically had levels because it's all built on hills. And so the very poorest people would be at the very bottom accommodation. And then the richer you were, the higher you would be, you know, in the city. And the poor people, the rich people would tip all their refuse out of the top windows and it would go landing on the ground in the alleys below where all the poor people live. So we did this one tour, which was, it's like a catacombs tour where you're going down to the city and they do a really great job. I mean, the Scots are wonderful storytellers. The accent itself sounds more legitimate.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When you're in Melbourne and it's some Australian
these all
guy.
These all used to be catacombs and now they're car parks. And you're like, ah, that's the stuff.
It doesn't have the same history to it. And so we were going through this these little tiny little rooms, which would, you know, back in the day would house like 40 people or whatever.
Mm.
And the best part about it was they had set up these mannequins. So as you're moving through the different rooms, they're sort of encompassing hundreds of years of history. So, you know, this was where people would have lived in the 16th century. Then in the 17th century, king blah, 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 deemed this. And so now you're in here. And then you got to the Black Plague era. And the way they set it up is you turned the corner. And up until that point, it had just been empty rooms, you know, little dark empty rooms, cobblestone streets and empty alleyways and things like that. And then we turned the corner and they'd set up these mannequins. And you know, you've seen those Black Plague, those medical masks that the doctors wear,
yes,
with like
the
giant beaks with the big eyes.
Yeah.
Everyone screamed. Like, it was such a perfect setup for a scare. Like, they did it perfectly because at first it was like, okay, so this is just going to be walking around empty rooms listening to the history of Edinburgh. And then it's like, nah, we're gotcha. The fourth room we go into, we're not going to tell you. There's going to be
mannequins.
There's
a plague doctor.
Yeah, there's a plague doctor.
You just add a little bit of extra sauce on that. You're like, I don't even know who this guy is. This guy's just a regular murderer as far as I'm concerned.
Well, see, that's Why didn't they just hire an actor to wear it? Like, the fact that they got a mannequin, you're right. They could have just spent a bit of extra cash and got a guy walking around with a mask on.
The Plague Doctor mask is one of those things that I'll see. It's one of those things I'll see on the internet or Twitter or Instagram or something like that. And I think, you've made this up. This is from an Assassin's Creed game.
Mm.
Like, it doesn't seem real. It seems like modern day has created this, but I guess it's like, you ever see
The Purge or something. It's like a mask that someone in the Purge would wear.
Yeah, I saw, it's a prison cell key, but it's also got a gun in it. You know, if they need to, you know, one of those things, you see them in and I'm like, I think this is some sort of steampunk device you've invented for
Comic-Con
cosplay.
But I believe the idea behind the beak, the long beak-shaped plague mask, was back, they thought it was, it's probably fairly appropriate for the times we're living in now. They thought it was like airborne. And
happening now?
Have you not heard? A Gaia ate some bats. And then you wished to never do live tours. And
no, that's true. I did. We've established I did the monkey paw thing. I apologize. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, I understand. Yeah. You're right. Yeah. I guess the mask was filled with
Hay or something,
and herbs and something. Yeah. Just whatever they could find in a. Oh, well, this seems normal and natural. We'll just stuff it in the beak, and hopefully we won't get.
I mean, meanwhile, the doctors had like rats running around their hospital rooms, you know, but that doesn't matter. We've got the mask on. Everything's going to be fine.
Yeah, that's right.
Let me just wipe you down with this rat and we'll be fine.
I'll just stuff your mouth with leeches and that way the Black Plague can't get in. So
I love bleaching. Yes. I love the idea of leeches. I mean, that's like less than 100 years ago, right? That they were putting.
They're still doing it, right? Some people are still doing leeches. Yeah.
Yeah.
I personally don't care for them. Don't like them on me or otherwise.
I can't even think of if I've ever had a leech on me. Sometimes, we talk about you think about a podcast as being friends of yours or whatever. I think about leeches and all I think is Stand By Me. It's like, did I once have a leech on my balls or is that
exactly?
Is that a movie?
Yes. I feel a very strong memory of going, like, you know, camping for a day with my family and getting a leech on my arm. And I'm like, I remember it and it was gross. Ugh, yuck. But maybe it was Stand By Me, you know, and it was on my balls.
Maybe it wasn't a leech. Maybe you need to go into therapy and work out what was going
on. Go to manscaped.com. You want the perfect platform for leeches on your balls? Well, here we are. Get the lawnmower. Have you been vaccinated, Charlie? Speaking of wellness.
Yes, I've had I'm half vaccinated. I've had my first jab, which Gemma and I sort of been on the move a little bit because we were in New South Wales and then because we travel for work, we had to get out of New South Wales to ensure that we could continue to travel. But then when half the country goes into lockdown, turns out it was a bit pointless. But then when we got up to Queensland and we're just trying to find somewhere, we actually were 2 days away from getting vaccinated in New South Wales when we fled. And then we got to Queensland and the waiting list was 3 months, going to be 3 months or more. But then Jem, my wife, was very, she just dedicated herself to finding a place we could get vaccinated quickly. And they opened a new center not far from where we're staying. So we drove there, and Jem literally got out and convinced them, like Jedi mind tricked them into getting us vaccinated. Well, what she did was she went up and she said, hey, look, you know, we've been trying to get vaccinated. I understand there's a long waiting list, but, you know, I'm a director and I work on set with a lot of people. I think it would just be safe. And so they're like, okay, that's fair enough. And so they signed her up. And then she's gone, also, my husband's in the car. And they're like, what does he do? And she's like, well, he's an actor and a podcaster, and they still decided to vaccinate me. I'm the least essential worker in Australia, but yeah, and no, I got my first jab. Have you been vaccinated?
Podcasting, the backbone of Australian society. I had my second vaccination last night.
Oh, so right. How are you feeling?
I was unsure about... Fine. I mean, not good, but not any worse than I normally feel. So
yeah. After the first jab, because my family, I've got a lot of older siblings, and they'd all had their first jabs, and they'd all sort of reported different levels of, you know, feeling unwell. And so I got my first jab, was feeling pretty good. And then the next day was like, whoa, like felt like I'd been hit by a truck. And then that night, like had a full fever, and I was like, oh, this,
yeah, wow.
I think maybe I've had like a really adverse reaction. Then the day after that was even worse. I'm like,
yeah,
oh
wow.
My God, like, am I the, you know, that one rare 0.000 case where there's an adverse reaction? No, it turns out my daughter had gastro. And it just coincided with me getting the jab. Because I was like, I said to Gemma, I don't know about this. And then she's like, well, Ayana's been throwing up for like 2 days. I think it's more likely that, because we're all in a little apartment together, that's what it's been.
That'll do it. I mean, they give you a little, you know, they give you a little documentation, and it's got the side effects on here, and it's like tiredness, headache, muscle pain, joint pain, and I'm like,
what's new?
That's what's new. Did you secretly give me the vaccination 8 to 10 years ago? Is that what happened? Because I'm not seeing any change to my quality of life, if I'm honest with you. Maybe tomorrow.
Encyclopedic knowledge of comic books and science fiction. It's like, oh wow, maybe I've got the natural antibodies.
That's right. So are you guys, the backbone of society, Charlie.
Are you guys, do you, so you have you been doing the Weekly Planet on and off remotely because of the various rolling lockdowns?
Yeah, it depends on the week. So this week there's going to be a new Marvel TV series called What If, and it's coming out Wednesday night. And by the nature of, you know, the relentless content machine that is the internet, we have to watch it, and then we're going to have to record, you know, a commentary and a recap on that and have that out, you know, within minutes, we'll have to do that by remote probably.
Have you ever been tempted to, like, high school book report it, where you're like, I'll watch the first 15 minutes and the last 15 minutes, you know, of a series, and then, you know, I'll just try and fill in the blanks as what's happened in between?
Look.
Come on.
I won't give it away, Charlie, but... I said very early on in the podcast, I may very well do that. Like, I might not watch a thing, and just not even you know, wiki it, just sort of wing it on the day and just see. And I have done that. Mm. I won't tell anybody what it is. If anybody can figure out it is, but it is a fairly large property, and I didn't watch it, and I just sort of I didn't tell James, and I just guessed at it, and nobody picked up on it. So
can you give us a clue? And I'm not going to press you any further. But was it a TV streaming show, or was it a movie franchise?
It was a TV show.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm just wondering if there's anything I could guess at. I mean, the issue for me, it's probably been the issue for most couples, I'd say, is that, especially now with the kid, is. When we watch something, it has to be something that we both want to watch, because ours are very, very limited.
Mm.
And Gemma has an interest in genre, but much less of a tolerance for stuff that she I think we as nerds will give something, you know, we'll give it a few episodes to see if it gets any better.
Uh-huh.
But for instance, we watched the first episode of Loki, really enjoyed it. And then I think it was the second, what was the one... where it was where he meets the female version of himself, and they just sort of jump around. I think it's the second or the third one. And
something
it was
like
a
that, yeah.
Pretty dull episode, and Gemma went way off the boil, and I have not been able to convince her to come back to Loki. And I'm quite curious to see where the rest of the series goes, but there's just one strike and you're out with her, and so consequently it means I have less opportunity to see it.
What are you watching now then, if there has to be something? Do you have any time for anything?
I haven't not lately because we've been moving around so much. But the one show that really I was surprised by how much I enjoyed it was Invincible. I don't even think it was listening to your show or anything that got me onto it. I just gave it a go, and it was such a shocking conclusion to the first episode. Yeah. Like it took me by surprise. Like I've never been as kind of I guess like moved by like an animation. It was so shocking and so violent, and because I think the way they set it up is so. Spoilers to anyone who hasn't seen the first episode of Invincible, but there is a big twist at the end. But the way initially when you're watching it, you're like, oh, okay, so this is like every other origin story, you know, and they're just ticking all the boxes. But it's such a beautiful setup to a very shocking twist. Yeah. And it was like after that, I was hooked and then just loved the whole series. Like that was the one that I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to break protocol of we have to watch stuff together. And I'm going to get the iPad out, and I'm going to sneakily watch this on the iPad while Jim's sleeping next to me. But yeah, I just loved that series. So I've downloaded the book, the comic book, the whatever the collected volume is of the first one. Because I heard you guys talking about it, and you're like, if you're not sure of what's coming, then you should read the comic book because it gets much more involved. And so I'm definitely that's been probably one of my favorite things that I've watched in the last few months. I was enjoying Devs. I got two episodes into Devs, but then baby stuff happened and moving happened, and now I've forgotten
that
what it's about.
That series is quite involved. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. there's too many layers of reality if you're also doing nappies and feeding in the middle of the night, I would imagine.
Are you viewing, because I know when Will watches stuff, Will's got this amazing ability to like multitask where he will have something playing while he's doing something else, while he's like, you know, writing notes or editing or whatever it is. And I can't do that. Like I have to watch something. I can't, I'm not really like a background watcher. What's your habits like?
No, I cannot background watch either. I will attempt it every once in a while, but then I'll come back from the, you know, putting the laundry in the washing machine or whatever. And I'm like, I didn't hear any of that. I must have missed a plot point. I'm going to have to wind back. And it just, the viewing takes twice as long. So no, I can't. I'm in your boat. Will is a singular entity. So.
Well, I've heard James talk about that he will edit with something on in the background. Like he'll just sort of plow through. Like when I first met Will, he used to do this thing where he would go, before his hips got bad, he would go jogging and he would listen to episodes of Law and Order. It's like the radio play version of Law and Order. And at first I was like, that sounds insane. But then I'm like, well, I guess those procedurals, it's all dialogue based really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like they're not doing big visual reveals. It's like it's all interviews with perps and trying to work out whodunit and all that kind of stuff. So
and you always know that it's going to be, you know, the crime is going to happen and then they're going to go to like an alley or some docks and there's going to be a guy unloading boxes from a truck and they're having a chat while he's still unloading the boxes and you're like, yeah, I get it. It's very much there's your podcast format. You could listen to episodes of Law and Order and try and figure out what happened to the...
Why? What do you need the podcast? What do you need us for, though? Like, wouldn't you just listen? Wouldn't you just direct the listener to Law and Order? Why do you need
just to listen alone?
Yeah. Why do you need the intermediary?
I mean, you know, cut in the middle, man. That's what I always say.
Well, there's something I actually want to do. We did a little bonus ep on our Patreon where... I'm really obsessed with like movie soundtracks, especially because I feel like it's like a lost art form, or maybe I'm just being nostalgic, but I think back to, you know, the 80s and the 90s where like a soundtrack album would come out and like, you can't hear Lust for Life and not think of Trainspotting or Stuck in the Middle, you know, not think of Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, maybe I'm just too old now. And what's that song from Fast and the Furious that everyone loved? That I'll Be Missing You or no? You know,
yeah, that one. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know the one I'm talking about. So maybe
it's
still exists.
It's been a long day without you, my friend. And I tell you all about it when I see you again.
Yeah, that one. The Paul Walker is Dead song.
yes.
Which,
That's what they called it at the time. It's very, very prescient.
Well, I was really surprised when, I mean, look, I don't want to speak ill of the dead, but I guess I'd missed the whole Fast and the Furious. I understood that there was a kind of like a campy love for the Fast and Furious franchise, mm-hmm. but I didn't realize that underneath that was a hardcore, genuine love of the Fast and the Furious franchise.
Yeah,
and so
right,
that when
yeah. mm-hmm.
Paul Walker passed away, it was like, you know, it would be like losing Mark Hamill from Star Wars or,
yeah,
you know,
right,
like
right.
an essential ingredient where people were like, no, you know, how can they keep making Fast and the Furious films without Paul Walker? Well, turns out you cast Scott Eastwood and you're a bit of CGI and boom, you can keep making Fast and yeah. Furious films.
Oh boy, yeah, yeah. What were we saying?
The soundtrack.
Soundtrack.
Oh yeah. So
yeah.
So we were talking about on the podcast about. I was saying, I think I even put a poll on Twitter. Like, what's your favorite sound? What's the best soundtrack from the 90s? And I put up three options, mm-hmm. which was Trainspotting, Pulp yeah. Fiction, or The Crow. Mm-hmm. And
okay.
I think actually Pulp Fiction won, which was surprised because I think Trainspotting is an almost perfect soundtrack. So the criteria for it being a good soundtrack is not just the quality of the songs, but how much do the songs evoke the film? Like, you know, when you
yeah, for
you
sure, yeah,
hear that song and you can see the scene. And for me, like Trainspotting, I pretty much can listen mm-hmm. to that album and see every single scene that goes with those songs.
You could go jogging and listen to the soundtrack.
100%, yeah. When I'm not listening to Law and Order. But then a bunch of listeners wrote in and with their own suggestions of their favorite soundtracks. Uh-huh. And Shrek kept coming up as like, huh. Oh, that's like one of the seminal soundtracks of the 90s. And I was like, Shrek, are they talking about the same, like, is there a different Shrek? Like, all I can think of is that All-Star, Hey Now You're an All-Star song. So
yeah, yeah, yeah.
We did a little bonus Patreon episode where we went through the Shrek soundtrack and we played a sample of each song and then, is it Shrek or is it Drek? You know, we gave it a thumbs up
sure,
or a
yeah.
thumbs uh-huh. down. And you know what? By the end of it, it was mostly thumbs up. And it's not to say that it's like an album that I would listen to a lot, but in terms of, oh yeah, I know this song. Oh yeah, I can think of the scene that goes with. Yeah, I guess it kind of worked.
What's another, like, I know there's a Leonard Cohen song in there. I know Hallelujah's on there, maybe.
Yeah,
and,
there's an Eels song, maybe... My Beautiful Monster.
Okay, all right.
Okay. There's a couple of Smash Mouth, of course.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I mean, there was an accompanying article that went with that I read out with in the episode, which was an amazing oral history of the recording of the Shrek soundtrack, in which Smash Mouth didn't want to, you know, they didn't want to do a tie-in, they didn't want to do a version of Daydream Believer.
Okay.
And then now. Like, they have made so much money from that one song. Like, it's
yeah.
the greatest financial decision that they've ever made. So that was, like, an idea for a show that I wanted to do, but then talked about it with a few producers, and they're like, well, you can't do that. You can't play, like... Mm. I mean, I think...
Licensed music, yeah.
Yeah, I think behind it, maybe mm-hmm. we can get away with it because it's behind, you know, Patreon, and it's not really being widely,
yeah, right.
widely listened to. But I was like, well, surely we can play just like a portion. I thought there was a rule that if you were commenting, like, you know, it's newsworthy. We're commenting on the song.
Sure.
Now we can get away yeah. with it. And I consulted a few different producers who were like, absolutely not. Like, if you pay, if you play more than four bars, they can sue you for whatever the fee of that song is.
Wow. And Smash Mouth lawyers they've got expensive lawyers, one would assume at this point.
Well, it ain't no joke. I'd like to buy the world a toke. Now we're going to get sued.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, they're sort of famous for like never wanting to, like that song I think was not going to be on their first album, and that became their biggest hit.
Well, this is another discussion we had on we did a little Dum Dum. Oh no, the idea of bands not wanting to play their biggest hit. Have you ever heard the story mm-hmm. of the Counting Crows came to Australia to play Blues Fest and they played the entire set and didn't play Mr. Jones?
Mr. Jones. Whoa, I did not know that, but okay. All right.
I mean, the gall. The absolute
right?
gall to think yeah. that anyone wants to hear anything but Mr. Jones. In fact, they should only play Mr. Jones. If they play a 45-minute
right?
set, it should be Mr. Jones like 9 times.
Yeah. Or Accidentally in Love from the Shrek soundtrack.
What?
Just saying.
Counting
isn't
Crows?
That, some, yeah, I think, isn't it?
Well, name me three Counting Crows, without looking online, name me three Counting Crows yes. songs.
Mr. Jones.
One.
Nope, that's all I have. I can't do it.
So, play the goddamn song, Counting Crows. This is what I'm
right?
saying.
Yeah.
I think they had another song. Another song called Around Here.
Around
okay,
Here.
Okay, sure. And they did a cover of Big Yellow Taxi. There we go. We got to three.
All right. Well, yeah. I don't even know. Who was the original version of Big Yellow Taxi?
Joni Mitchell.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
How's that going? Hum it for me.
You know, get a suit by Joni Mitchell. Paid Paradise and put up a parking lot.
Did they do a cover of that?
Yeah. It might have been for Shrek. It was for something.
I don't know anything about the Counting Crows, but I think I don't like them. I think that lead singer, Adam Dershowitz or something like that?
You're thinking of, I think, political lawyer Alan Dershowitz.
Adam Duritz? Look it up. Can you Google
Adam it? It is Adam Duritz, I think. Something like that.
But yeah. I just don't like him. I don't like him. I don't like the cut of their jib. I don't like the fact they ripped off Van Morrison for their biggest hit.
Well, you are stepping on some toes here, Charlie. Having a go at Counting Crows. I reckon at a certain point, bands do stuff like that just to see what will happen.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't... Like, it's not, you know, it's not their show. It's just a festival. And they're like, can we get a riot to happen? Can we... I'm not saying the Counting Crows did that, but I'm saying you'd be like, can we get some people setting some stands on fire? Because we didn't play Mr. Jones.
It is a weird kind of power move, isn't it? Because you know ultimately that... All right, so maybe you get your hardcore fans there that will know your cover version of Joni Mitchell and
yeah.
stuff. But you would know that at least 50% of the audience are only there to hear one song. And it's a weird dominance. It's a weird move. What a flex to say, hey,
and
that
you can't
song-
play it first because everyone will leave.
What's your... Anyway. If the Weekly Planet, if you had a Mr. Jones...
Yeah,
like,
go on.
So, all right, you're back doing live shows. COVID's a thing of the monkey paw curse has been lifted, and you're back doing live shows. And what do you think? What's a bit that you like? If you had to keep something up your sleeve for the encore, is there a bit or a line? What do you think was the biggest kind of like trope or thing that the Weekly Planet wackadoo? So, how do you say wackadoos?
That's right. Yeah.
What do you think go for?
What we could do is we could get the episode where we reviewed Batman v Superman, and we could maybe like we could print out scripts and we could just do a dramatic reading of us doing the review many years ago. We could do that. We could do any number of our famous characters, including the guy who doesn't know what Star Wars is.
Yeah.
We could do all the guy
Tom
who
Holland?
Knows everything. We could do the voice of little Tom Holland, Victorian era ruffian Tom Holland. We could do that. Sure. Yeah.
Where's my Pischetti?
Yep, absolutely. Who ate all my Pischetti? That's for sure. Yeah, you're across it. Thank you, Charlie.
I'm the guy who fucks up your punchline. Yeah, where's my Pischetti? You're yelling out from the crowd.
We don't do that anymore. We're gonna do a cover of Mr. Jones.
Was there an episode that you guys did? Was it the Batman versus Superman that you copped the most amount of hate for? Like, is that because I know. You're constantly accused of being Marvel shills. So when you've done critical reviews of DC, is that when you cop the most amount of hate?
Yeah, not Batman v Superman so much, although that is a rod for our own back that will never disappear because people find the episode and they're like, how dare you? That's the best movie ever made, actually.
I can't even remember. So were you savage on that, or what was the tone of the episode?
I think James thought it was fine. But in retrospect, not
does.
So much. He always, you get it. Yeah, you know what his thing. Yeah, but I kind of savaged it, I think. But now, Justice League, the Zack Snyder Justice League.
Yeah.
People are like, you went into that wanting to hate it, and I kind of did. But yeah,
I thought you guys, because I listened to that episode, and I thought you guys were both like, yeah, this is an improvement. It actually was much more enjoyable. I mean, you can't change the fact that it's 400. hours long, like that's not a. I don't think that really fits into like savage criticism. I mean, the film is longer than a normal film. Has 400 chapters.
True. Yeah, we are doing a commentary on it now, actually, but we've had to break it up into two because we couldn't do it in one sitting. We couldn't rabbit on for 4 hours just with nonsense for that long. We couldn't do it anymore. We gotta take a little break. We had to take several weeks off.
I mean, you're probably the right person to ask because, A, you're, you know, very well versed in comic books and comic book history, and you have, for better or worse, had to watch all these DC films again and again and again. Do you think the problem with the DC universe is the fact that the characters don't lend themselves to cinematic stories, or do you think it's just been a terrible botched execution from Warner Brothers and DC?
I think it's the second one. And I think, right. I think, and it's also, it was probably like the, I often think that it was probably like a, their mistake was just doing one movie every couple of years, whereas Marvel went 3 a year, or, you know, in 10 years we've done 20 movies. And even if you don't like half of them, they've still got a pretty good strike rate, you know?
Mm.
Whereas if they do one movie and half the viewing population are like, this sucks, then you have several years of people going, this sucks, and I'm not looking forward to the next one.
Yeah,
and
then that a lot of time to think about how much
yeah,
it sucks,
to really yeah. stew on this and yeah. how upset I am. And then you know, then executives panic, I assume, and they overcorrect for the next thing, yeah. and they make, you know, one was too self-serious and the next one is too silly, and, you know, they didn't have the, here I am, a guy with a podcast telling the multi-billion dollar AT&T Comcast Corporation what to do here, but you know, they just they should have just put out a bunch and hoped for the best and saw what people responded to and released.
Well, I know
another
you're,
bunch.
I know you're a fan of Patrick Willems, the film critic on YouTube, and yes, he did a video which is all about the problem with DC characters. This is why he thinks, you know, and he said, look, there are some fundamental issues with all powerful characters and how you tell interesting stories, and I sort of tended to agree with that, but I did start watching recently just the first couple of episodes of Superman and Lois, and I've never really been that into Superman as a character. You know, I didn't mind the campy Richard Donner stuff, but I kind of agree with Patrick, like, how do you tell a compelling Superman story when essentially it's like this power fantasy? But then watching series, and I'm only two or three episodes in, so I don't know if this series gets any worse, but I was like, oh, this is kind of a compelling story, because you are giving him issues which he can't deal with superpowers. Like, he has
He's got family,
issues, and he's got like a disgruntled son, and, you know, so he's got all this kind of stuff to deal with.
What are you going to do? Heat vision your son? You can't. Yeah, it's against the law.
You're going to punch small town redneck into the sun? You're going to arrest him.
Can't do it.
But that's I actually thought that series did a good job of, because I don't know, there's something about the cinematic versions of Superman where they try and bring in that more, like, the interpersonal relationships that feels so kind of like just awkward and mawkish, especially Superman Returns, you know, the emo stalker Superman who's watching his face through the window. Yeah. Like, it's like, this is creepy. Like, this, you shouldn't be using your superpowers to spy.
There's sort of two ways you can go with a Superman-esque character, like an all-powerful character. And I think one is you can give him even more powerful villains to, you know, to punch in deep space or whatever it is, which is, you know, which is what the comic books did for years, but, you know, but that's expensive. Or you can give him, you know, the interpersonal issues like they did with Superman and Lois, which is a good series. I think that series is probably the best, in my opinion, the best Superman we've seen in a very long time.
Yeah, right. Because he is excellent. What's the actor's name who plays Superman?
Tyler Hoechlin.
How do you say it?
Hoechlin? I think it's Hoechlin, but I've never heard it said out loud, so I don't know.
Yeah, he's really good. And I think he has that balance, because that character, there is such a danger of him being, you know, just a, like a nerd, like the Boy Scout kind of unlikable, holier than thou. But I think he does a really great job of being like, well, you know, it's almost like he's a soldier or a policeman. He has this occupation which, you know, he's sworn an oath, but fuck, it gets in the way sometimes. Like, you know, it's a real burden. Whereas I think the issue with the Zack Snyder Superman films is like, how miserable. There was none of the exhilaration of being Superman. Everything about it was, and, you know, I mean, it's been analyzed to death, but that scene where, you know, Pa Kent dies
Yes, sure.
It's like...
He kills himself, Charlie. He kills himself with a hurricane.
For absolutely no reason. Like, you think if there was... If you needed to create a diversion, like a hurricane gives you perfect cover to sneak in and grab your dad. Uh-huh. I mean, there's trees blowing over and cows getting... Or maybe that's twisted, but you know what I mean. There's enough going on. But this idea that, you know, giving... I think back when they developed that script or having Christopher Nolan as the executive producer, that was this idea of, well, we've got to ground it all. You know, it's going to be in that Dark Knight universe where, you know, like, you know, power comes with great responsibility and sometimes that responsibility is a real burden. But you need that balance of the power fantasy.
Yeah, for sure.
And then, you know, you can work in the interpersonal relationships. But, you know, I did an Instagram Live last week and one of the questions I got was about, are you looking forward to the new Robert Pattinson Batman film? Because when Will and I started Tofop, a lot of the discussion was Batman because Will was a huge fan of the Christopher Nolan Batman films. And it came across a lot more dismissive than I intended to be, but I was like, I don't actually think I care. I mean, I'll see it because, you know, I like comic book movies and stuff, but I just don't know that you can tell me a story about Batman now that hasn't been done in 50 different mediums. And it's almost, what I love so much about Invincible was like, well, A, it's an original character, of course.
Yep.
You know, they're playing on, you know, or even The Boys, which I didn't really like The Boys comic book, but I love the series because I feel like what they're doing is kind of playing on the tropes that we've become really, really used to now in our superhero.
Yeah, they've given it a kind of a more modern, like the comic book is just dirty and gross for purposes of being dirty and gross.
Yeah.
Whereas they've which I mean I still like it, but I think the series, you know, is making a point about superhero obsessed society. So yeah.
100%. Like I just I started following Vought on Twitter, and they started putting out, there's like a Fox style show called 7 on 7, which is like your weekly update on the 7 News, and it's brilliant. And it could easily be like a Fox News host or opinion maker on the show. But it's like, that's what I think you have to do now. Like, you can't just make a superhero film, which is like, okay, this is the origin story we've seen 1,000 times before. You need to be aware of a society that is now hyper aware of superhero tropes.
Or you could just do Batman again.
Mate, so thank you so much. Gee, that went really quick. I'd love to have you back on at some stage.
Yes, let's do it.
Can you do something about the monkey paw curse? Because it'd be great if we could just open up the country a bit more, and, you know, maybe we could do this in person next time.
Okay, well, look, I think I tossed it in my laundry basket, so if I can dig it out... I'll see if I can unclench the claws on it.
Do you want to promote the Weekly Planet, or is that not something you're comfortable with?
No, I'm always be promoting, Charlie. The ABP, famously. if you want to just go to your favorite podcatcher and look for the Weekly Planet. We talk about big mainstream comic book movies and TV shows and comic books, and it's
occasionally
it's,
video I games.
Occasionally video games. It's an irreverent take on pop culture, Charlie. I don't know if you've ever experienced a podcast that does such a thing, but we give it a go and we have a great time over there. So
it's a great show. Everyone should definitely check it out. Mate, so thank you so much. We'll speak to you when the monkey paw closes or opens. Hang on. The monkey paw has to open, right? For the curse to be lifted?
That's right.
Okay. All right. See you,
mate. Bye, everybody. Bye.